Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I'm Dr. Liz Murray, founder of this project, where each episode we will be sharing one interview from one of the voices from our project. Presented by myself and Laura Middleton Hughes, each episode will feature one voice, someone sharing their story of overcoming major medical problems early on in life to share a message of strength, hope, and resilience to others. To learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for the latest episode.
Hi everyone, I'm Laura.
And I'm Liz.
Today we are speaking with the wonderful Lorna Bramble, who has gone through a huge amount through her birth journey and postnatal depression. Today we will be talking a lot about what she's been through. We do touch on suicide, and we do touch, obviously, on the experience of postnatal depression. So welcome, Lorna. We have you today in the studio. I mean, is it studio? I don't really know.
On location.
We're going to start, as we're always starting, with a little bit of a quick fire round, just to get us all a bit relaxed and in the mood. And it also gets us to know a bit more about you.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Ready?
Go for it.
Flats or heels?
Flats.
Summer or winter?
Winter.
Ooh.
Controversial, I know.
Yeah. Nice, you know, bright snowy days.
I'm a winter baby.
Snuggly jumpers.
And snowboarding for me, like, come on.
Okay, yeah.
Rom-com or horror?
Oh, rom-com, definitely.
You like chocolate or sweets?
Chocolate.
Boobs or breasts?
I think I say boobs.
Okay, good. Reading or writing?
Writing.
Tattoo or piercing?
I really want a tattoo. And I haven't done it.
Okay, so we're getting a tattoo. Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Love or money?
Definitely love.
And a starter or dessert?
Dessert.
Okay. Perfect. Now we can move on to the life of Lorna.
Oh, okay.
So welcome.
The first thing I'm going to always say is, how are you? Now, one of the things that Laura and I are very passionate about is changing the whole concept of the question, how are you? We do not want a stock response of, I'm fine, thanks, how are you? Because as someone else once said to us, it shuts the conversation down. Yeah. So you might be fine, you might be good, that's great. You might be really happy. You might also be having a shit day and feel tired or have pain or have cried this morning. Anything is fine, but when we say, how are you? We want the truth.
The truth.
So Lorna, how are you?
Right now, completely nervous.
That's fair enough. We have stuck you in a room with a microphone. Generally,
generally quite relaxed around your company. The last year's been pretty shit, if I'm completely honest, in regards to my mum. She's really been quite poorly with mental health. And it's been a struggle, big time, trying to work out how to be a mum, how to be a daughter, to support my mum, how to also help my dad caring for my nan, who just recently passed away before Christmas. So it's just been a bit of a time. So for me, yeah, it's I'm not at the top best of my game. I've just come out of a bit of a hole that I feel I'm about to just kind of, you know, only way up, find myself in a more positive place again. So that's the truth.
So one of the reasons, well, firstly, why you're here is I know Lorna for many years. She's one of my closest friends. And we met, I was a hairdresser, so you were my client, weren't you? I remember the first day she came into the salon, it was that I realised we were going to be friends, is she came in Christmas Eve, rocked up with a bottle of Prosecco, and said, we can have this while my colour's going on. So I was like, brilliant, I love this girl.
And ever since, steal your heart right from that moment.
And I just remember back those days, we're the same age, we've both been with sort of partners long term, and we used to have conversations about marriage and about babies and everything. And so yeah, I came to your wedding, didn't I? And
certainly did.
Beautiful, with your lovely husband, Martin. And yeah, so I wanted to kind of just, let's find out a little bit about Lorna pre what we're going to talk about, pre-diagnosis, mm-hmm. and about, you know, your marriage and what made you and Mark, you know, decide to start a family or think mm-hmm. about having a family.
In all honesty, it was so far from like my priority when we first met. We never even discussed it. It just kind of happened. We enjoyed each other and had similar interests, very outdoorsy. Just kind of life happened. And I think we'd been together
a lot of years.
Yeah, like at least 10 years before we really actually said, so are we going to do this kind of family thing or not? And I know that's quite late in a relationship to do that, but genuinely it was like that. And yeah, he whacked the old proposal question out at 10 years. And I was like,
I remember that day.
Oh, wow, this is happening. Life, adulting. It was really, the moment he chose was like at home with dog breath waking up. And I was like, are you for real here? But actually, you know, perfect for us because we are generally quite an understated like couple. We wouldn't necessarily be comfortable having that moment in front of lots of people perhaps. So it was ideal really deep down, even though I thought it was going to be like all singing and dancing.
Flowers.
Yeah, I was like, it's just not us. So yeah, we ended up getting married in 2018. And I guess is it 2019? When did the pandemic start? 2020. That was when the pandemic happened. We hadn't even after our kind of like marriage, really had the chat about family. And I suppose it was actually the pandemic that made us realise we actually really like children. We are very lucky to be in quite a big family. And we used to do a lot with our niece and nephews. And well, that was taken away from us, I suppose. And you're like, okay, maybe we do like children and we really would like this for ourselves, like a family unit, in not just for this moment in need where you've got just you two, you're like, but something felt slightly amiss. So yeah, we did have a chat there, and then it was kind of like, let's just have some fun.
And
exactly, and not a lot else to do. So yeah, and we were incredibly lucky, I'd say, out of now, you know, realizing so many different stories. Like I was, you know, wasn't really young when I went through this whole conceiving process, and Mark was about to come up to his into his 40s, so he wasn't particularly young either. But we felt really grateful that we'd had that section of our lives together, and we were ready for a new chapter. And thankfully, it happened reasonably quick for us. Like,
I remember you saying you thought it was going to be a lot longer and have a lot
more fun. Yeah, and like, I think just the first two, we went through the process. I'm like, you suddenly realise, oh, actually, that I think I want this more than I realise when it doesn't happen. You're like, okay. And then luckily it did the following month. So I was so thankful to my body and the timing and everything that it worked out for me. And I didn't actually realise, but I was doing a huge charity walk, an 80-mile walk along the North Norfolk coastline, when I was just feeling a bit crap. And I was like, why do I feel like I'm about to poo myself? Why do I feel bloated? And we were raising money for Little Lifts, Crohn's, endometriosis, and it was the most incredible weekend. And then at the end of it, I thought, I kind of still not feeling okay. So I then was like, maybe this is a thing. So, and yeah, it turns out I was actually like 3 weeks pregnant.
Oh my goodness. Had no idea.
So yeah, that was the beginning, I suppose. And
but yeah, how did you find the experience of being pregnant? Like, did you enjoy it? Did you, some people absolutely loathe it, don't they?
I hated it. I'm going to put that out there.
You don't have to like pregnancy.
For all, like, I went through IVF and, you know, I had two successful pregnancies and both of them were horrendous, like sickness, morning sickness, feeling tired, I hated my body, didn't feel like myself. So I think, again, it's important to say, were you one of those mums who was like glowing and your hair's long and loving being pregnant, or were you like, this is secretly crap, what have I done?
It's a weird one. It's like, I feel really grateful that I had very few symptoms except for absolute fatigue in those first, like that first month, and I was knackered. But except for that, I genuinely was super lucky. Towards the end, I had this horrendous like trap wind pain. I guess it is still trap wind to this day, but it was the most painful thing I've ever had to this date still, despite going through like a C-section, emergency C-section and everything. That was definitely, for me, the most painful thing. I couldn't breathe. And it went on a bit after I had Finn as well.
Also, you're normally very physically active, like walking, going out. So when you have a change in your feeling, it's really different.
But like in terms of, I really do feel they were my two biggest symptoms. And I kind of just accepted that my body was changing, and it was kind of cool to see that I could actually do this. Like my body was allowing me to do it. And I'm renowned for not having much breast. So I said boobs earlier, didn't I? Actually, maybe I say breast.
Maybe you are.
So that was cool, that they start to swell. So I don't know, just starting to feel more like a woman. And so for me, it was like a really empowering, I suppose, experience. And I don't know if I glowed or anything, but I felt pretty good right up until even after the, like month after like having Finn. And so I feel really grateful I had a really special pregnancy, and probably like luring me into a false sense of everything's just great and it's going to be amazing.
And you went on to have a C-section. So were you looking to have a natural birth, or was it always going to be a C-section?
Yeah, so I always wanted like to be kind of in a controlled environment. I was happy to go to hospital. We're in the midwife-led birthing unit to begin with, and it was going really well. I felt under control of my breathing. That's the one thing I put some focus on, is my breathing. I was like, this kind of seems to help me in other avenues of life, so let's give that a serious thought. So yeah, all was fine, and then the boy decided.
Beautiful boy.
Yeah, little Finny boy decided to poo inside of me. Which is like releasing meconium. Is it meconium?
Yeah.
And then kind of things change. I wasn't allowed to stay in that lovely, serene environment that really did feel so inviting, and toast thrown at me and a cup of tea. And I was like, I'm going to get used to this.
How many weeks were you at this point?
So I went into, my waters broke on my due date, which was the 7th.
Amazing. So yeah. You literally had everything perfect.
And I feel like, it kind of was like up until that moment. And then I suppose it was kind of like a drawn out process from that moment onwards. It just felt like nothing was naturally happening, perhaps, and I still had enough energy to keep under control to an extent, but I was starting to fatigue and getting Finn was getting clearly quite not angry, but like unsettled in there, and there was like worries that he wasn't breathing correctly or his heart rate couldn't be monitored accurately. So when things happen to you where you suddenly have a hand inside of you, like, okay, this is escalating. And then I was like, it just upped its intensity. A lot more people all came round. They were incredible, like, team, genuine. I felt so cared for right from the moment I entered that hospital, and right till the end. But I had no idea, like, what the heck this kind of C-section, emergency C-section, is going to feel like. I just kind of closed my ass and closed my eyes and kissed my ass goodbye. Oh my gosh. And I was like shaking.
I mean, this is going to be great
for the whole time. I'm not even turning that into a blooper.
That's going to be on the reels.
Sorry about that. You can always rely on me. So yeah, it just happened. Suddenly they pressed the big button and off I go to theatre, not knowing. Mark was like this. I felt very sorry for Mark, actually, because he was just kind of cornered. No one really told him what was happening. And then eventually someone come to grab him because they realised that things were calming down and I could be awake while I was having Finn. So I feel incredibly grateful for that because, it was bad enough, like the thought of being put to sleep, actually being put to sleep, and then suddenly waking up sometime later to, find your son or daughter. So yeah, that all happened. And people say, are you sure that's not kind of what triggered the postnatal side of things? And I was like, I honestly felt okay. Like it was scary and whoa, but I honestly cannot say that was the one thing that triggered this. But that was probably the most I'd been through ever in my life, like medically. So perhaps it did. Who will it? Well, I'll never know. But I genuinely felt just grateful.
I saw you only like a week or so after you'd had Finn, didn't I? Mm-hmm. And you were in a good place at that point. You were sort of being a great mum. You were loving being a mum. You were mm-hmm. showing him off to all your friends. But you also were doing a lot. We know that part of your life was very busy. You still kind of put a lot of things. You always were very determined to keep your life as well as having a child. Mm-hmm. And that's the Lorna we knew.
Yeah.
And then life changed a bit, didn't it?
It certainly did. So I guess I've always lived life at 100 miles an hour and I accept the crash like 3 months in and you're like, okay, a weekend of crash, then carry on. And people are like, you're just mad for doing that. But I would feel really weird to change that. Mm-hmm. So I did say that I would, 3 weeks after having my son, go to one of my best friend's hen parties because I've helped organise it. I was like, of course I'm going to be there. You were there for mine. You made mine incredible. Of course I'm going to be there. However, if Finn comes along for bits of it, whether Martin, my husband, drops him off, it was going to happen. So it did. And I genuinely felt like I was on like cloud nine. I thought, bossing it. If this is what motherhood is, I bloody love it. And so, yeah, that was incredible. And then, like, we kind of went back to a bit of a normal routine, I guess, like working
3-4 weeks.
So yeah, so about like the last sort of week of that month, things were just like kind of just sort of Mark had to go back to work, and I was like, okay, that's how it is. It sucks, but it's okay. And life happened, and nothing drastically, I think, was like an alarm bell at that point. But I felt like everything was kind of just what I would have expected from speaking to mums, of like the norm to an extent. Like it felt like, okay, this is just that kind of hard transition bit of whether that's a bit of baby blue or not. But who knows if I have baby blue, but I feel like that bit was actually missed. It didn't happen. And then suddenly this huge thing happened. And it was the weekend where I was actually ordering flowers from one of my best friend's wedding, because I was doing her flowers for her wedding and being a bridesmaid. And my husband actually...
I was just thinking, so you do... Yeah, that's a lot. That's
a lot. Yeah. Yeah, so like in hindsight, you know, it wasn't an ideal situation, of course, but...
It's not impossible.
No, and I was determined, like, and I felt really okay. And I think if anything had like made me think differently before then, I would have been like, guys, I need to get something in place for you because I don't think I can do this. Anyway, I then my husband went away that weekend when I was ordering the flowers, and his mum was coming to sort of support me a little bit with Finn while I was sitting there ordering flowers. And I just sat at that computer and completely forgot everything that I normally would do like that. And it was the scariest thing, and I just started crying. Like, I had no reason for this to come out. I just came out of nowhere, and my poor mother-in-law was just like, oh my goodness, what is happening? And from that moment onwards, that's why I say it just declined very quickly. And I put on a front for my best friends, but I don't know how I did it like at the time, but I was in absolute floods of tears trying to just put her bouquet together. And just no coping mechanism to be able to like control my emotions at that stage. It was just constant crying. And I felt as one of my best friends went, that's the last thing she needs is me completely losing it here. Because weddings are stressful enough, like to organize. And you know, she had a lot on her plate. So I just felt like a huge burden at that point. But I was determined to try and find a way. And I was still able to an extent be able to put this front on that it's going to be okay. And then I think from that weekend, that might have just, I guess I thought I was having a mental breakdown at that point. And so did everyone else. And then it just kind of went on and on for another 4 months.
I expect a couple of maybe messages to never be read. And so, but after three or four, I was starting to go, yeah, is Lorna okay? Like, she hasn't said anything. So I sent a little message over to her husband, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he said, actually, my things are not very good. And as a friend, I think that's really hard because you don't, you just assume that they're busy because they've got a brand new baby. You don't, I mean, mm-hmm. Lorna's the girl never would have expected to have this happen to her. You know, your outlook on life, your positivity, as you say, 100 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So suddenly that stops and crashes. It was a really weird thing for me as a friend to kind of go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember turning up to your house one day because I was like, I'm going to go around, even if she doesn't want to see me, I'm going to go around and I'm going to drop some flowers and some little present off. And I remember coming in and you were sat there and you just sobbed. And you told me it's the first time you'd actually cried. And I think, I haven't even done my teeth and I haven't even washed my hair and I'm sitting here and I can't do anything. And you were a shadow of yourself.
Something like postnatal depression
can
hit anybody without any warning.
Yeah.
And what point did someone use? Was it you guys, your family? Who first used the words postnatal depression?
So I was kind of in a situation where I knew about postnatal depression because my mum had suffered on each occasion with three children postnatal depression. She never really talked too much about it, but I knew she had. I remember when my youngest brother was born, I remember her just cooking. Next thing, she'd be on the floor sobbing. And that's the only real memory I have of any mental health of my mum. And I was
it wasn't spoken about back then, was it? People didn't talk about these things.
And it was the norm. You're just meant to feel a bit crap after having children. That's just what's meant to happen. Well, no, it's not that level.
And when it does go more than baby blues, people are afraid to reach out for help, fear that their child's going to get taken off them. They feel like if they're struggling and seem to be struggling, that someone's going to say you're not fit
to be a mum. Yeah. So I was aware. And the funny thing is now, it's not funny at all, but I spoke to the midwives about this because my mum's like, you need to say my history just in case this could carry on with you. And you're fine. You've had a great pregnancy. That's literally what they said to me. And I'll never forget that because I don't know if that set me up for a sort of false sense of it really is going to be okay. I'll be bossing this. But obviously it happened. And
the last thing you want to feel as a new mum is failed. Like you failed yourself or failed your child or failed the situation, because if they're saying you should be fine.
There's no obvious trigger to
why
justify why you're feeling this way.
Yeah, and I think people would say I did too much and maybe it was a C-section, emergency C-section, but I honestly could not put it down to a single thing. It didn't feel like there was this one trigger. Who initially said this is postnatal depression, my mum said it, I think you might have it, but I was in disbelief. I was like, of course it's not, this is just me, just having a bit of a breakdown because I've done too much.
That moment, you can't see it. You can't see how bad it's gone. You can't see you don't really know how things change. You just know you're in this slump as such.
Yeah, and I suppose, and so my mum was a big driving force along with my husband to go, right, you're going to the doctors, whether you believe this or not, you're going. And so she took me along and they still, because of how quickly it was after birth, they put me into that category reasonably quick. But they also, they wanted to check that it wasn't, the trauma.
Okay,
yeah, that kind of thing instead. But it just, they seem to label it as postnatal depression. It could have been a part of that, I don't know. That's the hard thing about anything mental health, you never really fully know, and it could be this, it could be that.
Can I just ask, in that moment, in that period of time, when you were at rock bottom, what would be three words that you would describe how you felt?
Three words. I don't even know how to describe that. I just want to say this out, I can't, it's not one word, out of body experience, like that might be it. Because I sat there and I could see my husband like doing everything he could for keeping us afloat, and there's just me sitting there and there's no urge or no inclination to get up and help, to try and help, to believe I could help. My son crying in front of me, but just watching him, couldn't pick him up because I truly felt like there's nothing I could do that would help this situation. I remember sitting kind of this like this on a sofa for months on end, with sometimes just a dressing gown and like a bra and knickers on, never like, just had no care, because I felt numb to the core, with no feeling. And when you say about, you remember coming around and I cried, I hadn't cried until that point because I had nothing. So I now, in hindsight, perhaps that was a real step forward for me and an improvement at that point. And I had been taken sertraline, they described me. And I remember thinking, how can I possibly take this and know it's going to be like, what improvements? Because I have no idea what I'm feeling right now. This is so scary. And I had to just trust, I think this is the worst bit, I think I just didn't believe that that would help me. I've been very lucky not to have to take lots of medication in my life, and I didn't know what to look for, I suppose, for those improvements. And mum was begging me and my husband was begging me, just take that, like, let's just try it. And so I did, and it was like, I never did it for myself, because I didn't know what I felt in myself or who I even was. But my mum used to say to me and my husband, can you at least do it for us then and Finn? And that kind of was the only reason why I took that. And I did things like, you're going to come in this car for me if you can't do it for you. And that when you say like, what was that motivation to keep going? It was the people around me. And
they didn't give up on you. And I think that's really important. And I actually remember getting a message off you one day. I'd come to see you. And I remember it just saying, thank you for not giving up on me.
And like, because it's, you know.
At that point, was there any internal motivation? Sometimes there's a voice somewhere in the back going, what are you doing? Like, this isn't you. But equally, there's a lot of women who just think they're so consumed by this cloud of postnatal depression.
You don't have to get out of it, do you?
You think you've gone. You think that the old you has died, it's gone.
I'd say that was more me. Yeah. I had nothing telling me, come on, let's just get on with this. Like, because I think I would have done it, like, if I could. And there
it's
was
the
nothing
unknown,
there.
Isn't it? How long is it going to last? Is it going to, are you ever going to find yourself again? You
exactly. Just,
and everybody's even, story is different.
I think even that thought process is too much when you're in it. Like, it is like we were talking earlier, because, you know, I had severe postnatal depression as well. And it is like an alien has come into your brain and...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's not you.
Sucked you out and put something else in there.
You're a shell, and your brain just switches off. It's like a switch is flicked and your brain has gone, I'm not playing anymore.
It's like, and that's what I said, like, it's like the inhibitions, like your normal day would be like, get up, make a cup of tea, have kind of like maybe a couple, like checking the news, having your breakfast, go and get dressed. Those tasks were the biggest things ever. I remember my husband leading me up the stairs to just have a shower, and I couldn't take my clothes off. He had to strip me. I couldn't even open the shower cubicle to make myself stand in there. He had to turn it on. And I just stood there. I didn't even wash my body. I just stood there because I was like, there's nothing telling me to put some soap on my hands and wash my hair. Mark was trying to show me how to, by that point, so a big part of what I've, like, thinking back, changing subject slightly, I had this absolute obsession that my breast was not producing enough milk to feed my child, and in therefore he's going to end up with brain damage. That was the thing that I couldn't let go. I have no idea. I'd say I'm a pretty rational person day to day, but that I can't explain why I ever thought that. Like, and why brain damage? I have no idea. Like, and I think that was a real horrendous thing for my family to see, because I'd just be squeezing my boobs in front of my parents, my brothers, like trying to get anything out to believe there's something there. And obviously my body was probably going into this horrendous state, but like where it wouldn't even be able to produce milk by that point. But so we had to then transfer onto bottles quite dramatically quick. Mark was just trying to show me how to put some powder in a bottle, put the boiling, and I couldn't even do that. Like, I was so standing there. Yeah. And I think that's when I knew. I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, I'm never going to be Lorna again. Like,
I mean, obviously, like you're saying, that you got to the point where you didn't even know how to use shampoo. So perhaps you were so dissociated. It was almost a blessing in a way, because you weren't able to overanalyze just how bad things were.
Yeah.
But, you know, were there any thoughts of self-harm or suicide?
So honestly, I don't think my brain would have allowed me to even understand those thoughts, like, at that point, because the only thing I felt was that I wanted Martin to have a good life with Finn, because I knew I was never going to get better. My brain was telling me that. And I never said I wanted to, like I didn't ever want to die. But I also couldn't imagine myself being here for the entirety of life feeling like this. But I never had a moment where I was like, I'm going to act upon anything. Like, I remember my husband in an evening, like, we'd go to bed and he's like, Lorna, I'm actually really scared. And he never would let his emotions out. But that really shocked me, that whatever I was doing, I think I was pacing the room back and forth to this, my son, like, kind of, you know, having these moments where I'm back and forth, like swaying, saying things I would not even be able to recollect right now, that I hope he never has to try and, like, bring back out of his memory, because I'm pretty sure he's put that to bed, because he's like, I can't go there again, which, you know, scary. Yeah, it's really scary. And that moment, I think that was probably my ultimate low, when your husband's telling you, oh my God, I'm scared. Like,
but he loved you so much.
Yeah.
And he was there by your side every step of the way.
And yeah, you just can't believe you were in that place ever. Like, what the hell? How did we miss something early on to be at this point? Like, I think that's the thing I used to have going around in my head. How have we got here? And still to this day, I honestly have no idea how we got there, except that was just a natural process that my body was going to go through, whether I had an incredible birth, whether I had this emergency C-section, whether I think there's something genetically in my body.
Regardless.
Yeah, like, whatever.
Well, it's the same with depression. You could have all the money in the world, no problems, but yet still be depressed, still not be happy.
Exactly.
Some of it isn't a reason.
There is no reason. And that's 100% the hardest thing.
So how long did it go on for? At what point did you begin to creep back?
So basically, it makes me feel so happy just thinking of that moment, because, like, 100%, no, never did I think I was better until the moment on the 22nd of November. I woke up and it's the most cliche thing, but the light physically came on and I was like, I'm going to take my son for a walk, because that's a normal thing Lorna would do.
So did you go to bed that night?
That night, feeling, I don't remember feeling any better necessarily. I just woke up and I was like, had this absolute urge to do something. And oh my God, I just felt incredible. I just got him in his buggy. I just walked down to, there's like a little walk down to a mill, and the sun was shining. It sounds so cliche, But it was incredible. I just took selfies, like, with my buggy and my child.
I'm like, oh, yes, I'm back.
And I was like, shit, this, I can feel again. Like, I can feel something.
Did
and
you almost, like,
I can't still to this day say what the hell happened. But, like, whatever that feeling was when that was put to bed, for it was just incredible. And from that moment onwards, there wasn't one lapse. It was just...
First time I saw you after that moment, probably about a week or so later. So I remember you messaging me a few times being like, oh, I'm going to come to you for a walk. And I mean, bear in mind, you know, this girl had hardly left her house. Like, the fact she was going to drive to my house and come with me. I was thinking, is this real? Like, is it actually going to happen? And I didn't know that, you know, life had kind of, the light bulb had come back on again. Yeah. And you rocked up on my door and I opened it and I just saw you were thin with the biggest smile on your face and the biggest glow in your eyes, like, yeah. Your eyes were back. And I was like, oh my god, she's here. Like,
oh, Jane, that, like, definitely made my eyes leak right now.
Like,
it is like, you can't even understand how that occurs. And this is when you say, like, this hormonal thing, there's so much in that so many people don't understand, and yeah. I wish I understood more, because my mother's going through something now linked, I think, to menopause. So, and it just seems too coincidental, yeah. That she had postnatal depression and now she's going through this, and I'm thinking, oh god, I need to find some science to work to understand this process
on
more.
On a smaller scale, you get PMS, we all know, time of the month. Get a little bit of an estrogen surge, mm-hmm. so that the eggs can be released, so that then you have a period, mm-hmm. and women get teary, then they can get really angry, and mm-hmm. really happy, horny. Yeah. You know, you have this natural little.
Did you get horny?
Oh yeah.
Oh, man. I think a lot of people go through it, but don't. Maybe not as bad as what you are, and it just gets put down to, oh, you're a new mum, you're tired, you're this. And there's probably actually far more people who go through it without actually having the help or the diagnosis.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, the help side of stuff. Like, I know my husband was like, oh, I feel so alone right now. If it wasn't for the knowledge of my family, like, going through that, like my mum and dad with all of us, and having the most incredible network. Like, I had amazing friends, amazing family who could not do enough for me. Like, my mum took 3 months off work to literally be one-on-one care, because without that, like, financially, we would have been in a dire situation. I would not have been able to be left on my own. So the only other option is then going into a mental health hospital with your child to try and make sure you're both going to be okay. And that was never discussed with me, because they knew I had the setup around me, thank God. And I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. Absolutely take that. You know, if you need that, you take that. And I think that's what my husband's like, how do these families do it when they've got no one around them? Like, they're the families you need to reach out to, because it is, I guess, that's how the ultimate low becomes a reality. And
it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a team to help pull you out of that hole when you fall into that hole.
Yeah, and it was like that old mentality, why don't we still have that? Yes, we are strong, independent women, but actually allow yourself to take that help if you need it. Like, I think I was already too far gone to know what that means to take help, because it already happened. But if you have any inkling that something doesn't feel right, or your husband or partner saying, this isn't you, act upon it. Like,
it really makes me realise that, like, they don't have to be fine, and they could be struggling, and they need to be honest about that. And we need to have more conversations about that, because yes, you've become a new mum, and it's the most wonderful and exciting and beautiful sort of part of your life, but it comes with a huge change.
It's fucking hard. And like, it's simply that, like, it is really hard when people say, oh, it's going to be beautiful. I'm like,
no one talks about how difficult it is when you've got a newborn, mm-hmm. and when you're...
Well, you've got to prioritise something else.
It's like a train crash has hit you in the face. Mm-hmm. And some women do sail through it, just like pregnancy, and they make mm-hmm. it look really effortless and easy. But when you're finding it hard, you think you're the only person, because everyone, mm-hmm. no one's saying that it can be hard.
Yeah.
And so again, that further isolates you. Mm-hmm. And
I think, like, I kind of learned a lot through, you know, all of your journey and kind of when, what was the right thing to do at certain points of your diagnosis. And a lot of it is like, you don't need to ask, just go. Like, if you have this gut instinct, yeah, something's wrong or you need to be there, just go, because it's likely you're right. And my, even if it was just my husband, because I'm just sitting there in like vegetable form, because that's truly how I felt. I don't know if that's actually the correct thing to say.
You felt like a vegetable, it's fine.
Oh, carrot, God. Broccoli, yeah, yeah. just a carrot.
A carrot.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that for me was a huge thing of like, what can people do right? That just turn up and don't wait to be invited, because you won't be invited, simply because you're absolutely doing everything as a couple, as a family, to just stay afloat. Yeah. There's no extra headspace, yeah, yeah, to be able to say, oh, come on, oh yeah, come over this Sunday at 3 o'clock. Like, there's no way we would have been able to do that. Even Martin, like, even though, you know, he was the most incredible support, like, I don't know how he does it. He's already like someone who deals so well in tough situations, but when it's like your son and your wife there in front of you, I don't know how he did it. I just felt incredibly grateful that that only lasted 6 months. And like, when I think of other people's journeys that are going on for a lifetime, like, I can't imagine like that constant grind every single day. Like, you've both been sitting in front of me, you're dealing with it, stuff like that, exactly that. And I'm in awe of it, because, you know, I took strength from being able to get through it, and I guess you will take strength from getting through certain milestones in your diagnoses and things. And you have to, because Christ, like, to come out from something that low, you have to be able to go, bloody hell, we did that. We exactly. Somehow got out of that. We have a really healthy son. We're actually enjoying life again. And I just can't lap it up enough. Like, don't be wrong. Like, cleaning poo off God knows what right now and stuff is never gonna like float my boat. But I'm still grateful that I can feel those feelings that you're meant to feel when that's happening. And like, he literally did a poo in the bath with me the other day, and I'm like, really?
While you're in the bath as well?
While I'm in the bath.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it touched my foot. But like, yeah, I was like, get me out of here. So but like, despite all of that horrendous like that, you don't take it as like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. I'm just like, thank God, like, I'm having these moments and I can feel them and I can laugh about it.
And you are a really wonderful mum, and Finn is a beautiful, healthy, gorgeous little boy. I knew that you would thrive in motherhood, and it's just that little blip that, you know, I think when I then saw you enjoying motherhood and smiling and laughing, and, you know, I was like, there she is. This is the girl that she was meant to be. And I think that was really,
I think,
special.
From like thinking back to that time, and like, I feel like it's stolen from you, that those early like months, and you're like, oh God, just to like remember their smell, or like to just their little giggles and firsts. I don't remember that. Another big thing for me is I never really got to meet a big group of women going through the same that same point, because I didn't go to the baby classes and things because I physically couldn't. And so you're like, they've already made their bonds with their groups, and you're then like trying to bolt on. I never really did, I suppose. I just kind of did the next stage, I guess. I remember feeling great at the weaning stage. I thought, this is cool. Like, let's see what you can, you know, eat. And you do like find yourself going back to those moments. Oh, such a shame. Like, not only for myself, but my family, they didn't get to enjoy those months like you wish they could and wish and they should. Because they were trying to like make the best of a really shit situation, quite frankly. And
do you see other babies and you think, I wish I could remember
massively, like, even I've got like a little nephew now who's come out to one, and all the little smiles and little gestures he does,
have no natural memories yourself, and it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, I've got pictures, so I remember thinking, I vividly remember thinking, I'm going to take some pictures, even though I don't really know why I was taking them, but to hope that I can remember this one day. That wasn't real, like, that moment wasn't real. I just thought I'd take it in hope that I can feel something to that moment. And you can't, because you didn't really live it. Well, you did, but you don't, and I can't explain it.
Sometimes acknowledging what you've been through as well is a good thing, and being able to sort of almost look back on that, because I feel that, you know, we're very quick, especially with something like postnatal, you're very quick to almost forget it happened. and people kind of are like, oh, we'll move on. And it's like, I always say in my situation, like sometimes you have to look back to realize how far you have come and how much stronger you are, and how, you know, that moment is a small moment in comparison to your life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a blip. It is a blip in your life. And and going back to that moment is painful, and I'm sure quite traumatic at some point.
It's definitely gave me like that positivity that it's going to be okay eventually. Whatever you go through, like, you can find something good and okay to hold on to. Like, whether that's, if you do get that kind of diagnosis that is a lifetime, you still have these incredible grateful moments that, you know, someone else comes into your life that gives you something so special. Or I do feel like things that have now happened to me recently that have not been particularly great, I've found new coping mechanisms that perhaps I'd never have had, and finding the wins in those little moments. Like, I remember, and one thing I always will remember, like Martin always saying, you made a cup of tea today, and you like
and
like,
that's a brilliant win.
Yeah, and that, those little things, brush your teeth,
people don't realize that you cooked a dinner milestone.
Yeah, and like that in the moment you never remember that being a win, but now in hindsight you're like, yeah, I can see that in other people who are like struggling right now. Like my mom, she just did that, like I'm gonna take that as a win because that means there's some positive. So yeah, 100%, like hold on to those, because eventually something will feel good. Yeah. You know,
and it's proof that when you're in the moment, you think that, I mean, some women with postnatal depression have an overly strong bond with their child. Mm-hmm. Some women detach entirely and have no maternal instincts kicking in. And it's important to remember for other people going through it that who you are in that moment as a mother, as a person, your relationship with your child is not indicative of what it's going to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
When you get through that and you recover, those instincts will kick in, that bond will set
And I do.
And the baby will remember nothing of it. That's the other word.
That's such a huge thing. Huge.
The baby will remember nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that that bond and that development is not going to kick in later.
Yeah, no, I guess I was worried about that time, like, of that lost 4 or 5 months of that precious like breastfeeding moments and things. They didn't happen, quite frankly. And but he knows who mummy is, and he still wants mummy cuddles. And
I often talk about these moments, and it's like, even if that day was bad, it doesn't mean your whole week's bad. It doesn't mean your whole year is bad.
Mm-hmm.
You are, in your words, a carrot on the sofa.
Who didn't brush her teeth?
Who didn't brush her teeth? Like, you know, for months, you know, you didn't even understand how the concept of putting shower gel and shampoo on your hands into your hair.
Mm-hmm.
And you were not like that before you had postnatal depression.
Mm.
When it went, you're back to your previous self, but stronger. Like you just said, you're a stronger, more resilient person who copes with other things and has a much better perspective on the small wins.
Yeah, and it allows you to enter a world where you have had an experience, so you can share that. And like, the value of that is just unbelievable. Just like having like Laura as one of my close friends, like going through that, sharing your story as well as my own, like people got so much more awareness of these things. And like all my friends who have gone through childbirth since, there's this little thing in their head. Even I spoke to one of my best friends from university last night, and she's in Germany, not close with family around. I was like, how are you feeling? Have you had the conversation with your partner? Like, just keep an eye. And she has, because she's aware of it. And I'm like, oh, it's just these little things that make the difference eventually. Yeah, you know,
so that really, I mean, we are probably needing to wrap it up a little bit now, aren't we, because we're getting to the end. But we are going to ask a couple of questions, and that really hones in on that actually. And the first one is, how, like, what would you say to someone in your position? So say, you know, you're looking back at your life pre, what would you have said to yourself? So as a person, as you now, what would you say to your previous self, knowing you were going to go through that, or someone else who's going through that?
Believe it could happen. Like, believe it can happen. But you're not invincible, and it's okay if these things do happen. You never asked for it. It's your body doing something really natural for it, and you will need help 100%. So don't think you're going to get over it yourself. There are incredible like charities like Pandas Foundation UK. I wish I knew about that when I was going through it, mm-hmm. as well as Martin, because there's incredible support for the other half as well and family. And just, even though you won't believe like you're getting better, just keep on holding on to, you're going to try for the people around you if you can't believe it for yourself, if that makes sense. Because eventually you will feel again and you will be able to fulfill everything you imagined, like, and more, literally, because you will become invincible. In fact.
It was so perfectly succinctly said.
And also we asked you to wear something today that made you feel strong and made you feel amazing. And you've chosen this gorgeous outfit, yeah, so gorgeous dress. Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration behind that as your clothing?
Well, like, for ages, I suppose I haven't really put much time into myself, like, and I look at a lot of clothes remind me actually of some tough times, and I thought, it's about time I actually give myself something to feel nice in, and it was actually the littlest ball that made me buy this. And yeah, I walked into Oliver Bonus and I was like, this is it. This is it. I love that. And it covers where it should be. It like covered me to make me feel confident. I've never had a chest, so I thought, right, let's cover that. But it just makes, yeah, it made me feel great. And this, like, the color, the pattern, this is how I feel. Like, I feel like that bold, like, woman right now. And I get the pleasure of being a mum at the same time. You know, how lucky am I? Like, yeah, I just feel incredibly grateful right now. And I always think things can always just get better. It's the only way, in some way, shape, or form. So yeah.
And the last one. I think that leads so nicely to the final question that everybody gets asked.
Go on. So when you wake up in the morning, what brings you joy?
Like, what makes you smile when you wake up?
Genuinely, the light that creeps through near my blind. like genuinely, if it's a light there, I am so very happy because it means today's going to be a great day. But apart from that, like, just knowing that I have built this incredible unit of people around me to share it with, and when there are tough days, I know that there are people there for me, and I know that I can be there for those people because I'm now at that place that I can. To be present again, just to be present and to feel, is the most, like, amazing thing every morning.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.